It's Saturday, February 20th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. And it's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Geek's Miles Elam. He's a slacker and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And you have Bonsai with you today.
Yes, I do.
Bonsai's a fast little whippet. I wouldn't exactly call him a dog, but I'll call him a whippet.
That's fair enough.
What does he weigh, like 10 pounds?
13. Or, sorry, 30.
30. Okay, that makes more sense. But he's fast and crazy. All right. And alone.
Emphasis on the crazy.
Sitting alone today without a dog, but you might have some kind of animal on you. I don't know. I haven't checked your pockets. Al Luckow is a new media architect. Good morning.
Hello, everybody.
Why don't we bring more animals to GeekSpeak?
I don't know. We should have more animals in here.
Yeah. You should bring your ferrets sometime. We've talked a little bit about the iPad last week, and it's brought up a few people talking about it on our email and chat space. And there's been some critique and some issues, and you've got some clarity on what's going on.
Yeah, I just I got to the point where we've been hearing so much talk about Apple's iPad and just tablet computers in general. You know, people have called GeekSpeak. They've asked in our forums. My own friends have been asking me about it. I've just heard it so many times. I thought it might be just a good idea to go over what a tablet is and what the big deal is. So you see a lot of blog postings and various reviewers comparing the features of various tablets. And yes, Apple is not the only one with a tablet. There are a number of them out there. One of them called the iTablet, which runs Linux or Windows. We have a link to that on our site as well. I think for the most part, a lot of you might read what you're reading is probably speculation. Most people who are reviewing are just comparing feature lists. So they haven't actually had any hands-on experience.
Right.
With all this out there, there's a tendency to make something simple sound very complex and confusing. It's like when you try to buy jeans or something. You just need a pair of jeans, but you can't figure out if you should get straight leg, flare, boot cut, distressed, low rise, high rise, baggy, stonewash, 501s. I mean, you just want jeans. You know, they're simple. So I'm going to present here what a tablet is and what a tablet isn't.
Okay.
First off, a tablet is not a laptop. Laptops are like the de facto business machine. You type letters, work on spreadsheets, edit photos, maybe some video, check email. When you hear reviewers pitting tablet features versus laptop features, you might as well be comparing apples to oranges. They're two different things. I mean, in college, I had a Honda 125 dirt bike that I rode all over the place in the trails near my house. I also had a street bike, a Yamaha 650 Special.
And they're both motorcycles.
Both motorcycles. I had two. Because they're for different things. They were slightly interchangeable.
Yeah.
But
you could theoretically do some of the things the same.
Yeah. It would be not optimized.
They still transport you forward.
Yes.
They still deliver information to you.
I wouldn't want to be riding my 650 street bike in the dirt. It just would be awkward. So let's just take one scenario about what a tablet might present that is sort of different than a laptop. Say you have a lot of magazine subscriptions.
Go on.
You like magazines. They're all over your house, but you know you hate to throw them away, especially National Geographic's. And granted, sometimes you do look at the magazines again. Magazines are expensive, and it seems a shame to throw them away. So you end up with a lot of magazines, probably with interesting articles you may like to read or reference again if you were ever able to find the articles. Okay, now enter the tablet.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Right. I actually have National Geographic's in my house.
Yeah.
A lot of them. So now Now, say you have a tablet and you get your magazines electronically. Same magazines, but these sometimes have audio files, maybe video embedded, or maybe an interactive section or something. You can still read them in bed because most tablets are designed to be nice and light and flat.
And anyone that's had a laptop knows that using a laptop in bed isn't actually very easy. Because you can't really hold it towards you. There's all this extra part.
It's a big thing. Even the iPad is supposed to be the same thickness as a magazine. And you don't need a light to read it.
Right.
In addition, the extra features you might find in the magazines, another advantage is you don't end up with all these magazines stacked up all over in your basement. And in one tablet, you have every magazine you've subscribed to in one place, as well as archive volumes from years past.
So this is all on the assumption that the magazine companies will start producing like a PDF or some form of electronic.
A PDF is a good way to use it as an analogy to get your mind around it. But the thing about a tablet is it's a different interactive environment. So you'll be using swipes and touching it and moving it around.
And you can buy books through, there's lots of tablets that have book selling features, and that's just a step to, as soon as there's enough volume of them, magazine companies will produce some kind of electronic format. So I get the point. And the not finding things is a really good point. Last night I was thinking about making some bookshelves. Uh-huh. I subscribed to a few Wood magazines, or I used to, mm-hmm. and I still have them. I know that one of them has a great article on how to make those bookshelves that have the glass door in the front.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I'm going to have to search for that. And I totally thought about your discussion with a listener.
Yeah, I mean, it's an investment. Magazines are expensive. You pay a lot of money. So what you're really doing is you're preserving your investment and at the same time reducing your consumption of paper products. I mean, the same thing goes for newspapers. I get the Mercury News, and there's nothing special about getting the newspaper to your house, but it's astounding how much paper I end up with just at the end of the week, not to mention the end of the year. And, you know, you can't save newspapers. You'd be like crazy to save your newspapers. So you know, you recycle them. There's a company I ran across called Ave, A-V-E, Comics. And they will have that link on geekspeak.org too. And they're publishing comic books specifically for a tablet. So it's kind of like a graphics novel. You know,
right.
I'm not saying I want the paper comic book to vanish. I'm just saying that, you know, they're special, you know. This is just one example of a touch screen. And there's obviously things like electronic books, browsing the web, email, YouTube, all that stuff that you could use a laptop for. But who wants to sit on the couch with a hot 5-pound laptop sweating up your thighs? Plus, a laptop keyboard is totally non-ergonomic when you're in a relaxed position like that. The tablet's not for writing a book. You'll have some form of data entry, like a touch keyboard, but it's just really not for sitting there and typing.
Yeah. Now, some of the arguments we've had, I mean, some of the discussions have been about that you've been trying to express that you don't necessarily think people are thinking about it as a different type of device, still comes down to the, if I've got a device of that format, mm-hmm. and I can throw a keyboard onto it, I'm going to want to, because it's going to be easier for me to be in a space where I grab that, throw down a keyboard, and type up an email with a keyboard rather than just a touch screen. So there's some issue of where the line is. I mean, I definitely don't want a keyboard attached to it, but I would like a USB port that accepts any keyboard.
Well, yeah, it might be nice to have.
There's things that the iPad Touch doesn't have, but I do hear what you're saying. And there are laptops that have a swivel monitor that turns around that does turn more like to a tablet.
Right.
Which actually still has a keyboard.
But then you got this heavy
it
laptop.
Is heavier.
And a lot of this you could do on your iPhone or iPod Touch or your smartphone.
That's true.
But the only thing is the screen's too tiny. I mean, I don't mind having a tiny screen if I'm out on the road or away from my computer. It's nice to have that kind of power, but I don't want a tiny screen when I'm trying to relax.
Yes.
So, I mean, just think of the tablet as just a thing you can just lift up off of your desk at home. You know, it's just kind of floating around the house.
Simple.
And you could just check things real quick, you know, browse the web, maybe look at a magazine, check out I want to go back and look at some of my other articles I had about elephants and National Geographic, or, you know, I used to get Communication Arts and all these different expensive magazines that you just end up with a lot of paper stuff that just...
Okay, and just, you know, when you did send this email out to mm-hmm. our listener about National Geographic, I went and searched for collage work from National Geographic to find a really nice collage of, because uh-huh. that's what I do with the old National Geographic, because I give them to the kids and let them cut
that's,
them up. And
that's what I have in my head. I think to myself,
that's true, because I'm
saving
that.
Them because maybe someday my kids will make a collage out of them.
Oh man,
you know?
I'm doing it next week. Just by next episode of Geek Speak, I will have done a collage with the kids with National Geographic. That's my commitment to this week. All right,
that's just a summary of what a tablet is.
Yeah, I'm glad you're giving a perspective that it's a different type of beast.
Yeah, it's just different beast.
All right, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Miles, what's going on in with Obama?
Excuse me. As a quick story, the press secretary of the White House uses Twitter, and there's been a question with regard to new technologies, what is covered under the laws that say you have to archive all White House communications.
Right.
Well, lawyers for the White House have determined that Twitter is, in fact, covered by the White House Archival
Cool.
Act of 7879. And so we'll be able to see what the White House press secretary was tweeting about in, you know.
See, this is curious to me.
For all time.
Yeah, the interface to Twitter, of course, has both what you write and who you're subscribed to and what they're saying. And I'm assuming that the White House press secretary is also subscribing to other people through Twitter, using Twitter as its kind of intention, if you will. Does that stuff into the public record as well as informative of what the president's doing?
That's a fine question.
Because traditionally, what the president was reading and listening to from other people was not part of the record, right? Whether he got the journal or not, or the New York Times or whatever. It wouldn't actually be public record what he was reading.
Right, except for most of what's available out there on Twitter is freely available. The
Sure.
question of whether or not it gets saved. And if you save a little bit more, that's probably not as big a deal. The issue is more of, oh, no, we don't want to save those.
Right.
But then again, Twitter is a public medium, so I guess it's not
and,
that.
And the White House, I think it's Twitter/White House or WhiteHouseGov. I had it up a second ago. It's White House, so Twitter.com/White House. And I'm Twitter.com/Lyle, by the way.
But the
stuff they have is like this. Video, weekly address, President Obama talks, premiums, profits, and the need for health reform. And then there's a link using Bitly, which is a short link generator, that probably goes to a video of him doing it. Next, and that was 4 minutes ago. From the start of the show. And then fresh photo gallery, the First Lady goes to Philly. So pictures of the First Lady in Philadelphia. That was 16 hours before that. 19 hours ago, somebody blogs about skyrocketing premiums and shocking profits. So basically it's kind of an update on what's going on. And they do things every 9 hours or so, it looks like.
Hmm. I mean, it has to have some sort of like approval process. I mean, you know, when you work for the government or even, you know, I mean, you have to be, you can't just say what's on your mind. You probably have some sort of like, you know, 15 people look at it and say, yes, this is approved. This is not approved.
Well, it's also something that can come up in court. If there's any question about what goes on, this can now be used as part of like, this is in the public record. This is part of the official transcript. It means that this is now considered official communication, not an ad hoc side thing.
It's sure.
That it's part of the mainstream of the White House press corps now.
Hmm. Here's one that's really interesting. Find out, let's see, where is this? How to get Obama to speak at your graduation, learn more, and there's two URLs, and then become a fan on Facebook. And there's a URL to their Facebook site. That's interesting.
Huh.
And this person has 1 million, the White House has 1,708,111 followers. They
on Twitter?
On Twitter.
Wow.
And they're following only 91, and so far they've done 867 twits or tweets.
Huh.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's a new medium.
Yes, indeed. They also have a list. So anyway, well, we could talk more about Twitter, but I guess we won't. Cool. Thanks for letting us know. They also have a Facebook page. There's no mention of that article about whether that stuff's public record or not. Twitter's what's been added, but I wonder about Facebook as well.
I would assume it would be, but I mean...
It starts to become interesting, of course, because there's images and videos, and I'm assuming the videos get submitted as well.
Right, and listener David I has a whole lot of links up with regard to this and also about our conversation about tablets. And
okay, so
I'll post those up after the web or after the show's over. Thank you very much, David I.
Great.
David I is playing in our public chat section. You can join him as well. We're using something wonderful that allows you to do that, Etherpad. You can go to geekspeak.org on the show page, and on the left-hand side, join our chat. All right, thanks very much, Miles. So you were just mentioning the tablets. Well, you talked briefly about the iTablet. We'll move on to something else. There's been a feeling for me for a long time that we're not actually in the future until we have flying cars and jetpacks. And anything on that front?
Yeah. It looks like it's going to happen.
Flying cars?
Well, the jetpack idea.
Oh.
Martin Aircraft just signed on to participate in building a jetpack factory in Australia. So they've signed a $12 million joint venture to build the world's first commercially available jetpack. And the company that is, you know, spearheading it, it's in Christchurch, it's in New Zealand.
And right, Christchurch, New Zealand.
Right, yeah. And the idea is that they're going to build these things to be used by emergency response, you know, groups.
Right.
So you might have somebody trapped somewhere and, you know, one of these guys in a jetpack comes and saves you.
So the fire department has one of these in one of their vehicles.
They right.
Grab it, throw it on, shoot up at the top roof, grab the little kid, yeah. Jump back down.
They're saying police, military, a quick way of getting aid and relief into disaster hit areas. So they don't have a direct military application, but it could be a troop support role.
So like a sniper could get up on a really tall, impossible building quickly, and then kill
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
So how much fly time does it have with one charge or one load?
It doesn't say. It doesn't give.
That's the thing. It's always been kind of like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 seconds, things like that. But really, a minute of flight for a human being. Right. Can be pretty useful if you do it right.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and
it's more
terrifying.
It's more than, yeah.
Horrific. And
I mean, the thing isn't really that elegant like the ones we saw on the Jetsons. It's right. got two giant, like, fan things right behind your ears.
But it does make those little bubbles behind.
Yeah. The little flying saucer things.
It's like
things.
Just two giant fans. It looks like it's really kind of funny. It's like you've taken the plane and just kind of slapped the engines on your back.
The thing they did say about it, though, is that it is capable of reaching heights of 2,400 meters and can travel up to 100 kilometers per hour.
Whoa.
So, yeah, that'd be terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I don't like is, okay, I can make it just a little bit over this pass. All right, and I don't have enough to land. Oh, it was nice living.
It's
really scary.
They don't mention the airtime on this whole thing, so it makes me wonder about that. But, you know, we've got Martin Aircraft, which is you know, a major aircraft manufacturer. This isn't like some, you know, fly-by-night outfit. They're already, you know, pushing $12 million towards this, and I think they're saying they're aiming to make 500 units.
Wow. Okay, cool. Jetpacks are coming. Yep. So once they come off the line, it will be the future. No, we don't have the car yet.
Nope.
So
no car
close,
yet.
So close. Yep. Soon to be the future. Yep. Wonderful.
Exciting news.
And who's gonna design this stuff?
Well, Mattel has announced their new careers for Barbie. She has something like 126 careers.
Is one of them a flying car engineer?
No, but close. They did put out a survey asking, what do you think Barbie's next career should be? What's the next Barbie going to be? And one of them that came up was newscaster, which was nice. It's a nice departure from some of the things in the past. But there was such a strong force from the women engineers and computer scientists out there that Mattel has announced that they're going to do two this year. The other one being computer engineer Barbie.
Oh, cool.
Which is a nice refreshing change from 15 or 20 years ago. I forget when they had a talking Barbie that said, math is hard.
Right.
And then when there was a public, public outcry, they went, okay, fine. We'll make it talk at all.
Right, which is maybe worse. I love the same year that happened, though, that Barbie, the little doll started getting voice chips in them, basically, could speak. One of the things she said was, math is hard. She said a lot of things, like five different phrases. And they also had G.I. Joes that had like five different phrases. And an art group, and I can't remember where it was and which art group it was, went and bought a whole bunch of these units. Got them home, swapped out the electronic devices, repackaged them, and took them back to the store. And so people were getting like a G.I. Joe. And it was like, math is hard. And it's like a G.I. Joe with a gun. And then it was like, let's get them, boys, for Barbie. Beautiful piece.
That's one of those, why didn't I think of that kind of things?
Yes, I know.
Yeah. That would have been really neat to do.
Yeah, the newscaster is pretty easy to envision what she looks like. But computer engineer, what does a computer engineer look like?
Apparently, they all have glasses.
We have it on the front page of our website right now. There's a picture of it. So
right. I was glad to know that they weren't just putting her into a plain white button-up shirt with a pocket protector.
Right. No, she's got like a green tweed or green shirt, T-shirt. It's interesting.
She's pretty hip.
She looks hip. That's the thing. She looks like a hip geek. She looks like.
But she's got that geek chic going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. She's got. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't look like. She doesn't look like a computer engineer. Shouldn't she have like a? She's got a laptop. You know. That's cool. I like it. All right. Thank you very much for that. So. We talked a little bit about Barbie becoming a computer engineer and the labor force in general, and I'm going to horribly try to segue into the labor force issues of the day. Al, what are other issues of labor?
Well, I...
Like GM and NASA, for example.
I think we have some robot news here.
I should, you know, one of you should have grabbed a rope and pulled me along to that next...
You're too far away, dude.
Speaking of peanut butter...
Let's talk about pancakes.
Yeah. So anyhow, in robot news, GM and NASA have partnered to collaborate on a new type of assembly line worker. This is a robot that is designed to work right alongside of humans, what they say. Now, it's funny that they say in the article they would never go on strike, take a paycheck, or cost billions in pension funds. Just saying that is almost like
a slap in the face.
And they never complain and don't go to lunch, and they never, you know, they just do whatever we tell them. But there's a picture of this robot that they're designing. They actually have a form factor, and the thing looks like Robotron. You know, that the robot in
that
movie.
It looks like a Lego
movie.
Toy, but it's human size.
It's got arms, joints. It has a head that looks like a helmet with like a black visor on it. And Alal, you pointed out that you can kind of see the brain.
It looks like you can see the brain.
It's like, what were you thinking about? First, you're saying that they're not going to complain, and you're building this army of these human-shaped robots that are supposed to work right alongside of people. So it's and NASA is collaborating, so that the idea is to use these things for building GM cars. They've used robots for a long time, big robotic arms and things like that, to build cars. And now they say, well, if you had robots that look like people and they had these fingers with joints, they could do a lot more stuff. And the other thing that Lyle, you pointed out, was in the pictures that they show of this robot, they're holding like it looks like a rivet gun or something.
Yeah,
a rivet thing.
It looks like a gun. Yeah,
it looks
totally.
Like a laser pistol. And it says E3 on it. And it's chrome. It looks like this thing is, there's two of these things, and they're holding these, you know, weapon-like objects.
Yeah.
And they've got these black visors. You can't see their eyes. They look like, you know what they look like? Stormtroopers.
They do. They look like stormtroopers. Robot stormtroopers.
NASA and GM are building stormtroopers.
See, now you're talking like generalities about them, even though you're talking about a group of individuals saying they can't work alongside. You're totally being racist, man. I, for one, welcome my GM NASA robot working on the line overlords.
Wait, they're not going to be an overlord. They're going to be factory workers. Oh, it's just a
matter
of time?
Right.
Oh, no.
they're going to be working alongside us.
They
not
start
over
as factory
us.
Workers until one works his way up to foreman.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you've got this like,
and then it's like you,
stormtrooper foreman.
You're working for four days solid. I'm a human. I can't do that. I'm going to have to let you go.
Yeah, we're going to put you down in line and, you know.
Okay. Robots in factories totally makes sense in the sense that there's been robots for a long time, large welding, lifting pieces of metal. Mm-hmm. It's safer for humans, right? Assuming that you stay out of the way of them because they're not that intelligent. But these guys look like they're going to walk around and do everything a human can do, except that they don't need any brakes and they don't need any personal life. And basically, they really replace a human. And the thing that got me on it is if you had a factory that was really at this level of engineering and a designer could come in and say, well, I want this designed and sketch it up completely and modeled in a 3D model and say, this is the materials, and then say print, and it goes to a factory, and then the factory workers, which are all automatons, build it. Mm-hmm. That's creepy to me.
Yeah.
It's really, amazing too. Kind of cool.
And they keep making these robots, and they just look like they're really tough. You know? Could you make like a wimpy looking robot?
That's just to make you feel better?
Well, yeah. Basically, just
I think
for
your
me.
Insecurities are showing.
I don't really like to be surrounded by.
I welcome my butch alpha male robot overlords.
Would it feel better if it was like really, really skinny and small and fast? I mean, that'd be creepy too.
The big off like button, spider right chest.
Could be a spider. That'd be good. Doesn't feel masculine.
Yeah, I don't really like spiders either.
Is that the thing? Is it intimidates your masculinity?
I pretty much am intimidated by just about everything. But the one thing I would like on a robot is a big off button right in the middle of their chest.
Yes.
So,
and on the top of every hand.
Yeah. Just, or you just touch them like that light. That
or you just
touch
clap.
And it turns
clap
off.
On, clap
yeah,
off. Would work
yeah,
too.
Clapper. Install Clapper in all of these robots.
Sounds like a bad horror movie.
Yeah.
Hey, Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423 2447. We're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like today. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's toll free 1-800-655-5877. I believe that we already have somebody on hold. But there'll be lots of space today, so please feel free to call in. Podcast mention or iPhone app? A little geek mention?
Geek mention?
What do we call this bit? We recommend something. Geekmendation.
Geekmendation. Okay.
Geekmendation. Go ahead.
Well, I was showing you before the show this blue mic that clips into my iPhone.
Which isn't blue.
It's not blue, but it has the word blue on it.
And it's a stereo microphone.
It's a stereo mic that clips in, and it also is – you can buy this microphone and then use it directly in your iPhone with the standard recording controls. Or you can purchase the iPhone app called Fire, and
Did you buy it?
Yes, right. I did.
And is it good?
It's excellent. It's amazing. Amazing quality. You can record a pin drop. You could record a rock concert. It's got three settings.
Miles and Al, you guys are both iPhone developers to some degree. Miles, you can code it and make it happen, and Al, you can design it to make it look pretty. By the way, Al's iPhone app is out in stores now, or on the iPhone store. It's called... What is it called again? I'm blanking.
Image Quest.
That's right. Take a search for Image Quest. Really fun game where you match images where you have a whole bunch of images, and you got to play it. But if you have a whole bunch of images and they're related somehow, and you have to figure out what the word is, and you write in the word what the relation is. So
very right brain and left brain.
It's really cool. Yeah. I think that's against the rules because well, it's really cool, and that's just my opinion. Don't go get it necessarily. I don't know what the rules are. All right, anyway. The point is that you design iPhone apps, and Miles, yep. You've done some coding on them. So this is the iPhone app that I want. I want all of us to have these blue mics on our iPhones because we all have iPhones, right?
Right.
And I want to be able to start recording and syncing so that online our show is being generated, right? Mm-hmm. And then the station grabs that to spit it out to on air, and then we podcast it, of course. Mm-hmm. And the three of us could go anywhere we want with our iPhones and network, of course, and do a show live.
Yeah, I mean,
that's cool.
The mic is really awesome, and using it in conjunction with their app. I think their app is inexpensive too. I think it's lowercase F, uppercase I, lowercase R, uppercase E. It's like a weird thing like that, but it's called Fire.
Well, right. Granted, it's a stereo mic, but right now we're not stereo. We're
to me, we're
mono.
Stereo. Stereo pan center, man.
Can't we still already, right now, with our standard iPhones, go around and do this anyway?
Yeah, but there's no app for it. We need the live stream so we can broadcast live, because the whole thing is we're broadcasting live. So.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have that feature. It's really frustrating. I'm kind of sad now.
Anyway, that's an iPhone app.
Hey, GeekSpeak on KOSP. Thank you. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We are taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we're going to take the first call from Jim. And Jim is in Big Sur, I believe. Jim, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Morning.
Good morning. Is this Jim?
It is.
Hi. What's your question today? Are you in Big Sur?
Yeah, actually, I'm Paula, Colorado, which is a little bit north of Big Sur proper.
Sure.
I'm in the Big Sur.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So I do landscape photography here, and I'm using two external drives to store my images. I'm using a Western Digital Studio edition 2, and I have these set up for RAID 1 backup, which means I save my files and then I save them again. So I have duplicate files on one drive.
Right, you say on one drive or on two drives?
Well, that's the question.
And also,
I'm just trying to confirm my understanding.
Okay.
My understanding is, so I have this external drive case here, and it doesn't serve any purpose to do a duplicate backup within that case unless there are two independent drives in there. Because the idea is if one drive fails, you've done a duplicate backup on the second independent drive.
Yeah, that's right. RAID 1 is duplication. So
right, and there's exactly. also yeah, and there's so also performance benefit is, for reads because right. then it can read half the data from one drive and half the data from the other drive.
So it's way faster getting images up. But I'm not familiar with the product that you have. You have an enclosure. It has two hard drives in it.
Well,
and
I
one
have,
cable to your computer.
I have an enclosure that I assume has two drives within the enclosure, and that's my basic question.
Okay.
When you buy an external drive. And it says, do you want to set this up to stripe, which is put half of your backup on one drive and half on another, or do you want to set it up for RAID 1, which means...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'm set up for RAID 1, and I'm trying to confirm with you guys that this case that I have, which I buy as an external drive, actually has two independent drives within the case.
It
so
does.
One
it
fails,
sounds like
the
it,
other
yeah.
one works.
Yeah, the Studio Edition is a box. It's got like kind of a double width. It looks like a giant book. Is that
yeah.
the thing? That look, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking, taking a look online, and sure enough, it looks like it's got two hard drives in it.
Okay.
So you can do RAID 0 or RAID 1. Now, RAID 0 would produce faster writes and reads, and RAID 1 would produce redundancy. Now, keeping in mind that the other issue about this, and I think, Miles, is it true that RAID 1, if you pull the drive out and stick it in the machine normally, it will still be usable?
In most cases, yes, yeah, true, yeah.
That's the one concern you have with RAID environment, is that the hardware that actually produces the RAID for you, especially if you're doing something like Striped or RAID, you know, RAID 5, which is both of these things, it's one drive for parity, you get striping and you get redundancy.
Right.
But in that situation, if the hardware has a failure, the drives are really hard to get the data off of. So that's one of the concerns about RAID, is that the environment that the RAID is in is actually a weak point for you. So you might have done redundancy, but it could be a problem. The other thing about this box is that does it tell you if it's failing? And that's a crucial thing with RAID 1. So let's say you get your two drives in this machine, and the drives themselves, if you pull them out and stick them in a different enclosure, like a normal enclosure, you'd still be able to read the data off. But you're going along, in the first year, everything's written to twice, two of them. And then all of a sudden, one starts to fail, and it no longer is having writing and reading. And you're not aware of it, and you keep writing to it, and you keep reading, and everything seems to work fine for you, except that one day the next drive goes out, and now you've lost everything. And that's the one concern I would have, that you've got to make sure that this thing's going to report back to you,
you know,
if it has a problem.
Thank you for bringing that up. It has never occurred to me that if a drive was failing, I wouldn't know it.
Yeah,
I guess I need to call Western Digital and say, hey, you know.
Well, if it came with a manual, there may just be
a red light that shows up on the front.
It
says intelligent drive management features, automatic power-up, safety shutdown, and LED status and activity lights make the storage system especially easy to use. So just pay attention to what those lights look like. If they change, be concerned.
Yeah, usually if it's a red light, it usually shows when a drive has failed.
Okay, so far everything's given me this consistent white light. So,
good.
But I'll check that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for the call.
Can I ask you one more quick question that you guys may not have anything to say about because you're iPhone guys?
Let's see what happens.
I'm about to switch from my Palm 650 and upgrade to a smarter smartphone. But I need a real keyboard, not a virtual keyboard, which is the only thing the iPhone has. So I'm looking at the Palm Pre Plus.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Droid. Any comments?
If you're already in a Palm environment and you don't want to have as much hassle, stay in the Palm environment.
That's what I was thinking.
I'd go with Palm 2.
Yeah.
And that Palm Pre is really a great phone.
Yeah.
The issues, of course, are the number of apps. But I guess they'll be coming along for the
Palm. Yeah, no, they'll be.
I mean, you're not going to be able to compete with iPhone at this moment.
Right, but never.
You'll probably never be able to compete with Android. iPhone will be highest, Android will be second, and then Palm and the other one. Well, then BlackBerry and then Palm.
But there's plenty of space. Plenty
of room. Right now, you know, if you're going to look at the Android and you're going to look at the Palm, also look at BlackBerry. Just because.
Oh, I have been, but the BlackBerry, like the Bold, only has like 1 gigabyte.
Yeah, yeah. You want more storage space. All right, well, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you very
much. Take care, Jim.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Well, let's go ahead and take a call from Chicago. Sunil, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, Lyle. Hey, Geeks. I had two questions. The first one's, I think, kind of quick. Lyle, you mentioned that you use a Magic Jack.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get a double check from you on. I mean, I've been hearing some criticisms online. It has advertisements, it doesn't have good service. I just wanted to know if I should be skeptical about it, or do you, you know, recommend it with two thumbs up?
You know, I picked up this thing for research basically for $20 plus a year of unlimited calls with it. And at that price, my skepticism concern just was like, well, it's only $20. Like, who cares, right? And it's worked extremely well. I can plug it into my machine. Anytime I've got network on my machine, it can ring a phone and I can call out with it. Magic Jack is a small USB device that plugs into your computer. If your computer has network, you actually run their software, which is actually on the thumb drive aspects of this Magic Jack. You plug a normal phone, a Rodial phone or a tone dial phone into it. It has a dial tone. You start to call and it calls through your computer using the network and makes a phone call for you. So it's basically like extremely cheap portable phone. It also will ring from that phone. So it's really quite neat. Now, if I was going to make it my primary phone, I haven't decided to pick one up for myself, even though I kind of need that because I don't have a home phone, because it's kind of a pain. You have to have a computer dedicated and on for it to work. And then you also are in the situation, if you don't have network, it doesn't call. And then the reliability, I haven't tested it like a desk phone, but probably people's concern for it is rational.
And the information data compromise or anything, nothing significant to worry about there?
I normally consider a phone call a pseudo-private thing. Like, you know, anybody can really listen to a phone. When I was 12 or 13, I made a phone tap bug, which I think I still have, which basically you go and connect it between the two lines of a phone line, and it transmits on the FM spectrum to any radio within a block or a block and a half, depending on how much power you use on it. And so,
Scanner. You could use a scanner, too.
Yeah, and there's scanners, too, if you have wireless ones.
Yeah.
But it's extremely easy to tap a phone. So from that perspective, this is probably harder to tap unless your machine's compromised.
It's awkward to use, though. I mean, because you need to be carrying your laptop around with you
just to make a phone call.
To have a phone call, and then you got to open it up, and, you know, it's awkward. But, you know, if you're... You know, you're trying to save money and you want to get the neat, geeky thing. This is a neat, geeky thing, and it does work.
It does work. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. And I wanted to know about, I just wanted to figure out, is there a backup solution where I can, I mean, I have like four machines, two of them Windows 7, two of them XP, and I just wanted to have it so that I can just plug in some sort of a USB to one of the machines and it'll sync up whatever I need. Like, let's say I want music files from one computer.
I see. So you have a whole bunch of shares on these machines and you want to have, and you really only care about the public shares. So you're wanting to copy those from one across your network and make a backup of them.
Seems like he should get in.
Yeah, I have a program called SyncBack.
Yeah.
Which is
that you're going to need to manually make these saves. Also, pretty much any backup solution will do this. What you'll need to do is you'll need to map the drives to drive letters on your computer. And in that case, it works pretty well. So what you do, the machine that has the USB device and the software that's running for backup, you're going to want to go ahead and connect map network drive and then map those shares as like drive X and D and or X and, you know, Y and W and such, right? And once you've done that, they look like local drives to the software that's doing it. And then the software will work just like it would work for your normal system. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but yeah. Is there a way like where I could have just one sort of device and it just plugs into all computers at once?
That's a NAS. Basically, if you had a network attached storage, and if all your computers are on the same network, that's what I do.
Yeah.
And it's a big, giant, massive terabyte drive that just runs.
And then you're going to run the backup software on each individual machine.
Right. So
that's
the machines have to run the backup software.
Oh,
right.
How the times change. 1 terabyte isn't massive. It's going through my head. Wait a second.
So I've done that situation where you actually have, you run your backup solutions from your computer, and each computer is connected to this drive and then does the copy of the things it wants to that drive. That works as well. But I don't have a good, clean solution that just plugs in the network and copies all the shares, which, you know, also sounds like a very convenient thing to be able to take content from somebody, right? You visit their house, you plug in a machine to their network, you leave later with copies of everything public on their network. That kind of format, I don't know how – I mean, you could definitely do it with something like rsync and some batch scripts. It wouldn't be a problem to make that. But I haven't seen it sold.
Okay. So NAS, that's –
NAS,
right.
A NAS, a network attached storage. There's also SAN storage, storage attached network. But basically, it's using the network to have a large storage, and it shows up as a shared drive, just like the rest of them, right? But it also has a whole bunch of features inside it. You can manage it. You can set it up for doing things for you.
Or you can do things like put a library on it, and then access that library. So Your files actually, and this is something that I do with my computers, I don't generally like to keep files on my computers. I actually store them outside. So if somebody were to take a computer, it's just got applications on it. So my files are actually externally in an attached storage. So, they go there, and that's where they're saved, and then they're backed up from that point. And that's really where my heart of everything is. A lot of people do that. Some people put their, their music on an attached storage, so they don't have to store it on their main machine. Your photo albums, that kind of thing. That there's a lot of fun you can have with attached storage.
Right? Yeah,
it's really.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. That was Sunil from Chicago, and we also have a few couple more calls. We'll probably be able to take about three more calls or so, there's room for one more. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Al, you had one more robot story.
Oh, yeah. There was a robot that can solve Rubik's Cube, which, there's been a few of these, but this one, it's, let's see, how fast can it do? It can
12
do
seconds.
12 seconds. It can do, it's called the Cube Stormer, created by Mike Dobson. He's been working on it for 2 years in his spare time.
And it uses Legos.
It uses Mindstorm's RCX speed cubing robot. It says, Lego Mindstorm is the – so he kind of made it out of Legos. And this is a real kind of geeky thing to do. He's just worked on it for 2 years in his spare time.
Yeah,
and sure. Now he's got a robot that can solve a Rubik's Cube in 12 seconds.
That's pretty cool.
That's like – And there's a video of it we'll have on our site, and you can watch this thing just go.
It's a 3x3x3 Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
You mix it up any way you want, and it doesn't matter what you do with it. You stick it in the system, you say go, and it takes an image basically of all sides and then spits out the algorithm and generate and rotates that all around until it's solved. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty neat for
what
a
I would like
set
to
of Legos.
What I would like to do with that is have a whole bunch of patterns in place.
Uh-huh.
That you want it to be, mm-hmm. and then you just give it a Rubik's Cube and it does that. And that's cool.
Or you know what would be cool?
Just have it make it look random.
Take a Rubik's Cube and peel off the colors and switch them.
So it can't do it.
So that it can't do it. And just have it go.
This is why. This is why the robots are going to take over at some point. Because someone like you is going to mess with their circuitry.
Yeah.
Man, you're just mean. It's unsolvable cube. Did you do that to somebody once?
No comment.
That's something you should do to Woz.
Yeah.
I got to say.
This Rubik's Cube is really hard.
Oh, I can do it.
But I did solve it. It's now a Rubik's dodecahedron, though.
With a band so you can solve any Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
From Salinas, Mark, welcome to GeekSpeak.
I think I've got one of those Rubik's Cubes. Somebody switched the things around.
Yeah, mine too.
Mine too, yeah.
Can't get it in 12 seconds. It just doesn't work. I was calling partly because last week you talked about the Frisbees.
Yes.
And I've got a perfect geek toy. I think it's a Frisbee with a Starship Enterprise attached to it.
Oh,
so it hangs from the bottom?
It's a thin, lightweight plastic thing that hangs behind it as it flies. I mean, you throw the Frisbee and it spins free, and then the rest of it just is like a tail.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really?
Now, is the Frisbee the actual front end of the Starship?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, I'm jealous. I've got geek envy.
Where'd you get that?
Then the nacelles would keep it.
Yeah,
angled. So
I'm not
going to
show it. I know somebody will take it. But.
Have you played? Have you played golf with it yet?
No. It doesn't fly all that well.
Yeah.
Distances and
light. No, it'd be fun for teasing. Miles and I could play, and you can
actually
have one of those, Miles, and then on like a hard hole that I just missed, you can go and pull out some like fake fun toy and make it and just totally blow me. Oh.
Well, it's difficult to play with that Frisbee because when you throw it, it comes at you at warp speed. and catching it is like
disappear. Yeah.
If you catch it wrong, phasers fire.
Things are bad.
Yeah. And then of course that's why they always get thrown around the deck.
Oh.
Whenever something happens, they all get thrown because of course it's a Frisbee.
Right.
Bumps into things.
Yeah.
You know,
wondered why they didn't have seatbelts on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, you'd think they would. Well, because they've got inertial dampeners.
Well, they should have those inside. Those. Tractor beams that would come on whenever they're getting thrown
either,
around.
Either have better inertial dampeners or have some kind of restraint system. I know, I agree. I've talked about this
internal.
Well, they have gravity
on
there, so they're affecting gravity, so inertia is. They can do stuff with it.
They are doing stuff with it. That's why they're not dying when they get hit by large forces.
Yeah, but they are being shaken around. Like, no.
I know. That's because inertial dampeners take a second to kick in.
Imagine how bad it would be if they didn't have those.
That's right.
But listen, the reason I was calling was that I've never wanted to type. And so when I got a computer, I had to get the voice recognition software, Dragon Speak.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've got a cell phone that requires me to type on my texting. And I just wondered why cell phones don't have voice recognition software for texting.
I have a question for you first. Are you using Dragon Speak, and do you find it Are you find yourself able to use it?
I finally learned how to type, and there was too much correction that I had to do. It was good for rough drafts.
So you tried DragonSpeak. I mean, I'm on sort of a personal quest to see if anybody has ever actually used DragonSpeak.
I used it for a couple of years. I wasn't a heavy typer or letter writer, but whenever I did that sort of thing, I would activate it and plug it in, and I played with it for a couple of years.
There's some services that do this kind of thing. I don't know if they actually send text messages, but there is a product called Evernote, Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
And this does do voice recording and then translates that to text. And there's actually quite a few features that do that. I don't know of any that will do that and then send that as a text message, because that's a little strange. It wouldn't be coming from your phone.
Yeah, I just wonder why telephone, put it on a typing thing.
Because the answer to this is that computers aren't that good at voice recognition.
And also, at a telephone, you can actually speak into and talk.
Right.
And
so
then
if you
your
want
voice
to speak,
actually goes.
If you want
you
to speak to somebody.
You can send voice messages now, too.
See, that's what I would do, is just start sending voice messages to people. Of course, they want to read what you have to say instead.
Right. I mean, that's part of the thing about the texting. I guess people would be saying LOL.
Humans are really good at this, actually. So what you could do is make a phone call and then just type with your voice. So do LOL. And the person will get the message. And that will work that way. Yeah, and then they can type it down for you.
Okay.
No, sorry, there's not an answer that I know of. Hey, other geeks listening, if you do know of a product like this, I'd love to know about it, and we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah,
so
I don't know what type of
I don't know what
type of phone you have, but, I mean, there is the Dragon for iPhone.
Oh.
And it's reasonably good.
Yeah, it just doesn't do text messages, I don't think.
Yeah.
It writes out the text, and then you can copy and paste anywhere you want.
Right. But text messages are short, so copying and pasting, especially on the iPhone, it's like hold down, select all. Yeah,
I would love to find some kind of speech-to-text software that somebody's been using that they actually said, yeah, I use it all the time, works great. You know, I just haven't run across that person yet.
Well, I'll get off the air and let them come on.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
Does Google Voice cover that at all?
Google Voice doesn't. It does translate it can translate your voicemails to text. You know, it can. There's a lot of features that do that. It's not perfect, but like Evernote does that too.
Yeah.
There's a few of those. There's even a free one. You call up, you leave a message, and then it turns it into an email to you.
Right.
And you can even email friends in your address book. I can't remember what that was, though. I was using it for a while. All right. Let's see. Charlie, Dr. Don's producer, says he uses DragonSpeak pretty successfully for medical notes. Oh, Don uses it successfully for medical notes. But that doesn't count. Doctors can't write.
You can't read their writing anyway.
You can't read it anyway, so she doesn't have the ability to write. So it's not fair to say that's... Yeah. From San Jose, Tony, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys. Hey, I just wanted to comment on the NASA GM collaboration to build robots.
It's awesome, isn't it?
In a technical sense, yeah. I mean, it's a technically interesting accomplishment, but I wonder about the social implications of it. As someone who just retired from 25 years in semiconductor manufacturing, I'm very aware that manufacturing jobs in the Valley and in the United States and also Detroit have just vanished. Most of them have gone offshore, and it looks like we're now setting up to kill off the rest of manufacturing jobs by using robots. In other words, the old fear of automation displacing jobs. And I'm not sure this is something to cheer about.
No, right? I wouldn't say it's something to cheer about. It's creepy. I mean, that's why it's a labor issue, really.
Mm-hmm. It is. What implication does it have for society when you have even yet more unemployed people?
Right. Or employed in different ways. I mean, there's another aspect. Someone's got to make the robot. Someone's got to design the robot.
Robot repair.
Wait a minute, robots could build other robots. That's the truly scary implication.
So the question is, we humans can do repetitive tasks quite well. We can turn on lights every time we enter the room without even thinking about it, right? You can turn them on and off really easily. It's a repetitive task. We can program robots to do that as well, and we're actually good enough now where that's easy for us to program something else to do it for us. So the question is, do we keep advancing a level of do we start appreciating more and more something that we can't create a robot to do, and therefore that defines where humans should sit in the world? I mean, it's definitely an issue. I get that. I mean, the phone got rid of courier messaging, right, in New York.
Well, this is not quite the same as those single offs. What he's talking about is akin to the Industrial Revolution. It's a fundamental change
in how
manufacturing.
He's saying the social ramifications of something like this.
Yeah, it's drastic. Displacing human capital. Right. I mean, it's displacing labor with capital.
Yep.
I mean, another way of putting it.
So here's the question then. Can people imagine a way for the Industrial Revolution to have occurred without having all of the devaluation of human beings, child labor and stuff like that, horrific working conditions? If we can figure out a solution for that, that would help us in terms of imagination and figuring out what are the solutions for how we still live together, even when you have the bulk of the work being done by, or manufacturing work anyway, done by these robots. It's okay, it's pretty well, much the same class of problem.
Yeah, but what are we gonna have human beings do, and how are we gonna employ them, and how are we? You know, I mean, massive unemployment leads to social unrest, and I'm really afraid of that.
There's a question of whether or not you need to have humans do those things, or whether or not human beings just will have more leisure time, and whether we would accept that as as a culture,
with the assumption that
okay,
the people
that
own
the
robots and
the
wealth that comes from that goes to everybody, which wouldn't necessarily happen. Yeah, it's a great concern. Thank you very much, Tony, for the call.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care. All right, well, we've come to the close of another Geek Speak, but in just a second, Al's going to tell us our USB Crazy of the Week. So stay tuned for that. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by the University of Advancing Technology, offering master's degree programs for geeks to become innovators of the future. Class is now forming. uat.edu/masters. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. My name is Lyle Troxell, the Geeks Today, with Miles Elam and Al Luckow. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence. He's used with permission. I want to thank Al Luckow for the music for the theme song today. This show is Creative Commons, share alike, non-commercial. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly hour-long radio quiz program. Each week on the radio, you can test your knowledge against some of the best and brightest in the news and entertainment world while figuring out what's real news and what's made up. On the web, you can play along too. That's Wait, Don't Tell Me today at noon on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. All right, Al, go ahead and hit it.
Hi, this is Al Luckow here. Geek Speaks Crazy USB Device of the Week. You ever sit around eating a bag of Cheetos and then maybe have some peanut brittle and a few pretzels, maybe some gum, and top it off with a box of Jujubes mixed with Laffy Taffy? You're probably saying, yeah, I think that's what I had for lunch today. Well, did you ever wonder what it might look like in there? Like in your mouth? Between your teeth? What kinds of things would you see if you were able to look inside your mouth? What kind of evil might lurk within your second bicuspid, or even deeper, like your second or third molar? Well, my friend, there's only one way to find out. The USB mouth camera. It looks like an ordinary toothbrush, except where the bristles should be, there exists a circular array of lamprey-like LED lights with a tiny cam in the middle. Built for Windows XP and Vista, but like so many of these crazy USB devices, the entire web description is in Japanese. But hey, great photo on the page. Check it out. Link to from geekspeak.org.
Like a dentist tool.
Yep.
For GeekSpeak and for KUSP, my name's Lyle Troxell, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to our program.